A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Germany Elects, a special World Review podcast series on the German election from the New Statesman. I'm Jeremy Cliff, international editor of the New Statesman, in Berlin. It's now official. Germany has a new government. Angela Merkel has stood down as chancellor after 16 years. Her centre-right Christian Democrats are out of power, and a new centre-left coalition, led by the Social Democrat Olaf Scholz, is taking charge. In this bonus follow-up episode of Germany Elects, I'll be exploring the incoming government's vision for the country. What's in store for Germany's place in the world?
There is really a different tone on Russia and China, even more so. And I think you see the footprints of the Greens and the FDP all over this chapter.
That's Jana Pouliarin of the European Council on Foreign Relations. I'll also be asking the economist Christian Ordendahl, what will the new government mean for Europe's industrial powerhouse?
The modernization ambition, the ambition on climate change because of the Greens is also clearly there. And that requires quite a bold investment agenda.
Let's start with a recap. This was Olaf Scholz on September 28th. 2 days after the German federal election.
There was a very successful social liberal coalition in Germany from 1969 to 1982. And I'd add that it grew out of Grand Coalition. Willy Brandt became Chancellor in 1969. Helmut Schmidt held that role for the second part of this time. And we later had a very good time in government with the Greens. We have good memories of that too. So to form a social, ecological, liberal coalition now has foundations in the history of German governance.
The election itself had produced three clear winners. Scholz's Social Democrats, or SPD, had risen 5 points to about 26% of the vote. The Greens had risen 6 points to about 15%. And the Conservative Liberal Free Democrats, or FDP, had risen about 1 point to 11.5%. In the clip you've just heard, Scholz was setting out his ambition to form a so-called Ampel, or traffic light, coalition of the three parties, so-called as their colours are red, green, yellow. New Statesman readers will have known that this was a possibility. We tipped this as a realistic chance as early as March. Well done us. But many had seen it as a long shot. Post-war Germany has never had a federal government made up of three different political families. Could the three distinct parties, bringing together the political philosophies of social democracy, environmentalism and liberalism, really forge a common set of plans for the next 4 years?
Meine wichtigste Botschaft dazu lautet, die Ampel steht.
The answer came sooner than many expected. Here is Scholz again, now flanked by senior figures from all three parties, announcing on November 24th that they had reached a coalition deal. The 177-page document pledges a decade of investment in modernizing German infrastructure, 80% of energy from renewables and ideally no more coal power by 2030, an array of liberalizing social legislation, and a proactive Atlanticist Germany in the world. Its ambition is captured in the title, Mehr Fortschritt wagen, or Dare More Progress.
Wir wollen mehr Fortschritt wagen.
Some heard in that echoes of the legendary SPD Chancellor, Willy Brandt.
Wir wollen mehr Demokratie wagen.
Scholz and his new allies have consciously aligned themselves with Brandt's slogan, Dare More Democracy, under which he led a boldly modernising federal government from 1969. It's an exhilarating comparison, but does it set up the new traffic light government for disappointment or even failure? We'll see soon enough, as Scholz and his ministers begin work. Some names to look out for are Annalena Baerbock of the Greens, Germany's new foreign minister, her party colleague Robert Habeck, the new economy and climate minister, and Christian Lindner of the FDP, who takes over the powerful finance ministry. As a new era in German politics begins, another has come to an end. On December the 2nd, Angela Merkel bid her farewell at a military ceremony in Berlin, surprising some by choosing a song by the so-called godmother of punk, Nina Hagen, to be played by the brass band. In her valedictory speech, Merkel wished the new government well and left with a warning about the precariousness of democracy.
In particular, the past 2 years of the pandemic have held a magnifying glass over the great importance of trust in politics, science and public discourse, but also how fragile it can be.
Now Merkel has gone, and a new German government takes on that responsibility. More on that shortly. Well, joining me to discuss the new government, I'm delighted to have Jana Pullerin, who is the head of the Berlin Office of the European Council on Foreign Relations and senior fellow. Welcome, Jana.
Hi.
And we're joined by Christian Odendahl, who is the chief economist at the Center for European Reform, also here in Berlin. Welcome, Christian.
Hi, Jeremy.
So I wanted to get both of your thoughts on the coalition deal, on what we know about the new traffic light government and what to expect from it, particularly some of its first challenges. So I guess my first question is a broad one, and that's simply, we've had now 2 weeks, a little over 2 weeks since we got the coalition deal. That's enough time to sort of digest it and give it some thought. Could I hear from both of you, perhaps starting with Jana, what your initial reactions were, what you made of it? Did you think it was a good document? Were there things that were obviously missing? And was there anything in it that surprised you?
Well, I was particularly looking at the Europe chapter and the foreign security and defense policy chapter, and I was actually pleasantly surprised, maybe because I was a bit traumatized because of the debates we had for the past 4 years on all things security and defense related, you know, the kind of kicking the can down the road approach when it came to the Tornado successor plane decision and armed drones and all this. So I was expecting much worse, and I was pleasantly surprised. I think there is a super strong commitment to the European Union, European integration all over the treaty, not only in the Europe chapter. I think how kind of the special responsibility of Germany for the EU is framed is quite strong. I like that we talk about strategic sovereignty a lot in the treaty, and on security and defense. I see all the right boxes ticked, basically. And I also liked that we change course on somewhat on Russia and China, and that we have a tougher approach there, where while we are, of course, staying true to ourselves and our nature, and there is also a hell lot of continuity in there. But overall, positively surprised.
Great. And we'll come on to the foreign policy picture in more detail in a bit. Christian, what about you? Because you came on Germany Elects a few weeks before the election, and we talked a bit about the sort of the shifting German economic debates and whether or not a new government, particularly one led by the Social Democrats, would bring in a more proactive investment agenda. What did you make of the document?
So I think what I found interesting is that those three parties on some issues looked for genuine common ground. And whenever they found it, I think this agreement is very bold, right? And then you have other parts where you can already by reading this text realize how painful these negotiations must have been to find some form of compromise between essentially very contradictory views of the three parties. And some of the economics agenda falls into that second category. And the sort of modernization ambition, the ambition on climate change because of the Greens is also clearly there. And that requires quite a bold investment agenda, right? But if you look at the sort of the financial details of how this is supposed to come about, you can tell that this took a while. And the way it's been sort of agreed now probably leaves enough room for this investment agenda. So we're going to see a sort of a properly progressive investment agenda, but within limits, right? Because we have going to have Christian Lindner as finance minister, and sort of the fiscal hawkishness, if I may call it that, is one of the unique selling points of the Free Democrats. And they needed to preserve that image. And I think in the coalition agreement, they have found a compromise that is workable.
I mean, I was struck by the fact that many of the more positive reads on the investment aspect of the coalition deal were mainly happy because of what wasn't there. Things weren't ruled out that some people thought the FDP would demand be ruled out. And so you've got this sort of vaguely positive language about the role of the KfW, Germany's public investment bank, in driving some of this investment. You've got relatively open language about the European Stability and Growth Pact and how you can make that more pro-growth. But it sort of leaves a lot of this, as you say yourself, to be debated and discussed. Do you see this being a major cause of conflict within the government? You know, a lot of this has been left open by the coalition deal. That does create opportunities for a progressive agenda on investment and macroeconomics, but it does also create the possibility that you have a loggerhead type relationship between, say, Lindner as the finance minister and Robert Habeck as the economy and climate minister, trying to drive through a lot of this investment with Scholz as the Social Democrat chancellor. Do you see this being an area for conflict?
Potentially, yes. But I think that's the way this agreement, the way the negotiations happened, right? I think surprised everyone in that how constructive and how secretive they were and how much all three parties are sticking to the compromise they have found, even though it wasn't really, for example, on the spending front, necessarily that close to what the Greens had wanted in there, right? But still, the Greens are sticking with that. I think this current COVID crisis in Germany shows how strongly these three parties intend to stick together to that compromise that they have found, and sort of have the back of the party that is in charge or that is responsible for whatever agreement was found. So I think this is, you know, there is room for conflict, of course, but I think they have clearly mapped out internally what that means and what they are willing to do and not to do. You're absolutely right. It's important what's not in there. So there are no firm red lines on some issues, which is opens up a sort of constructive German position in the European debate. And that's very important. But I think on the fiscal side, one of the things to keep in mind is that basically the conservatives, and I'm counting the Free Democrats also as a conservative party, they have sort of boxed themselves in, right? Because they have agreed to climate targets, which are now being enforced by the courts. And there are two ways to achieve them, either through tough regulation and higher carbon prices, which clearly is politically very challenging to put into practice, or through a very bold public investment agenda, right? So there's no place to hide for fiscal conservatives. If they don't want a bold investment agenda, then they have to show how else they're going to achieve those targets. And I think it shows in this document that they want to combine a very bold climate agenda with this sort of investment and trying to avoid the very harsh sort of carbon taxes and regulation route.
While we're on the domestic picture, I mean, one of the other things that struck me about the coalition deal was how much social liberalization there is in there. And I guess that makes sense because it's an area where the three parties can broadly agree. They're closer on some of these subjects than they are on economic policy. But it's still quite striking. You know, you've got the legalization of cannabis, voting at 16, a more liberal citizenship regime, new rights in terms of reproductive rights, rights for LGBTQ plus people. That was quite striking, and I hadn't expected quite so much on that front. I wonder if either of you'd like to come in on that dimension.
I have to agree. That is a very bold part. And this is what I meant with sort of genuine common ground. Whenever they found genuine common ground, they really went for it. And this is, I think, clearly reflected in these parts. So it also shows that after 16 years of conservative rule, basically, Germany was in for some sort of modernization step, right? Because we had made progress under Angela Merkel, but at a snail's pace compared to sort of the progress that Western societies and overall have made. And so I think this was, you know, in the car, but most of the discussion was on other issues where the parties did not agree on. So maybe that came as a bit of a surprise, but that's a great step in the right direction. And I'm grateful to the three parties that they really went bold and boldly for it.
Yeah. Well, that's the common ground. Let's turn to foreign policy now. And I mean, one of the other striking aspects to this, and I think Jana, you've alluded to it already, is the firm language on China. And I mean, I wonder if that too has the potential to be a dividing line within the coalition, because you have on the one hand the SPD, which is at least parts of which are traditionally closer to the view that you should see China primarily as an export partner, you know, closer to that view that's prevailed to some extent under Merkel. And then you have the Greens and the FDP, which are traditionally more hawkish on China. How do you see that playing out in the new government? And are there any clues that you take from the language in the coalition deal?
So I think there is really a different tone on Russia and China, even more so on China than on Russia. And I think you see the footprints of the Greens and the FDP all over this chapter. At the same time, I think a coalition treaty is basically a letter of intention. So we have to see how this plays out in real life. And I still see that, for example, from the SPD, first and foremost, but also from business lobbyists, there is also a strong emphasis on don't rock the boat here, don't rock the boat too much. And we need to have a stable relationship with China and don't be too hawkish. And I see basically two powers working against each other to a certain extent, continuity and change. And in the end, what I really hope is that the result will not be paralysis, but that it will be moderate, progressive China and Russia policy, because I think that the Greens are not ready to let their ambitions go. And I think it also can, especially the language on China, bringing Taiwan in, mentioning Hong Kong, and all this, I think, shows how much the debate in Germany in the end has shifted in recent years on China. What I'm a bit more worried is that kind of this hawkishness is then also backed up by the military commitment, by hard power. And if there is a readiness also to see kind of the defense and security aspects of the treaty as part of the approach vis-a-vis China and Russia.
I'd like to ask you about the role of foreign minister in all of this, because it's a sort of commonplace in Berlin that the foreign ministry isn't what it was, that it was, you know, having been this kind of engine room of foreign policy under, for example, Joschka Fischer in the last Red-Green government, it's sort of been sidelined under Merkel and foreign policy has been done from the Chancellery. Now, the big open question is whether that changes now that Merkel's going and now that you have Annalena Baerbock entering, you know, a Green like Fischer entering the foreign ministry. And Baerbock's given a couple of interviews in the last week or so, one with Der Spiegel, one with the newspaper Taz, where it feels like she's doubled down on some of the sort of the tough language on autocracy and values that we saw in the coalition agreement. I think obviously Scholz subscribes to the vast majority of that, if not all of it. But I mean, do you see foreign policy being driven more from the foreign ministry again?
I think there will be certainly the attempt to do so. Annalena Baerbock will try to undo the recent power shift, at least to a certain extent, and will try to own many of these portfolios or influence them. At the same time, I don't see the Chancellery backing down, or I still see Olaf Scholz committed also to deal with the big foreign policy portfolios himself. But actually, I think it's a huge chance also for the Foreign Office, because a young woman comes in. I think it's a healthy breath of fresh air. She has ambitious ideas, and I think she can really be very successful, despite the fact that yeah, the importance of the Foreign Office has been reduced. What I fear, though, is that she is in a somewhat difficult position now after the election campaign, because she is weakened in her own party. She is, even though the results for the Green Party were much better this time than in the previous federal elections, she is seen as somewhat not having delivered. So I think, yeah, that because also of the way she did the election campaign, some amateurish mistakes that were done in the broader public perception, people might think, is she up to the task? And so I think there is also some uphill battle for her, and she really needs to basically show early on that she's fully capable and that she can do it. And I think there is also an enormous pressure on Annalena Baerbock.
After the break.
You know, this notion leading from behind is, in a German context, always the equivalence to no leadership. But I think in this case, it's different. I see him really as a leading figure.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'd like to turn to, you know, the man at the heart of it all, Olaf Scholz, and we've talked about him on this podcast before, ahead of the election. But I mean, obviously we can look back at his time as mayor of Hamburg, at his time as finance minister, and draw some lessons about how he runs a team, how he leads. But I mean, Christian, I wonder if you'd like to add any thoughts on what we can expect from a Chancellor Scholz, what sort of leadership he'll provide, how he will compare to Merkel, what sort of, you know, figure he will cut on the world stage. Is there anything that we've learned in the last few weeks or that you'd point out as being something we can expect from him?
So just before that, I want to come back to Annalena Baerbock for 1 second, because we tend to think of Annalena Baerbock as sort of young and inexperienced, right? And we never say the same about Christian Lindner, for example, right? Even though the age difference between them is not even 2 years, I think. And Christian Lindner does not have any executive political experience, right? And so I think this is what Jana says is correct, but also it always worries me a bit that we tend to think that Annalena Baerbock needs to prove herself, because apparently she's a young woman, whereas, you know, Christian Lindner, who nobody calls a young man, even though he's just 2 years older than her, apparently does not have to prove himself despite having never had any executive office. And this is a big difference, for example, to Olaf Scholz, who's basically had any possible job in German government that you can have, right? So his wealth of experience from being a mayor of Hamburg, from being a labor minister, from being a finance minister and vice chancellor, now to the chancellery, I think this will show in sense of continuity of a sort of, you know, centrist, stable, rational, calm leadership. And he has sort of positioned himself in this election campaign successfully as the continuity candidate, also in terms of style. from Angela Merkel. Not necessarily an exciting orator or, you know, but someone who can provide leadership in a sort of calm and rational manner, right? And this is sort of what he will probably continue to do. His main job, and I think he more than anyone else, is looking ahead towards the election in 2025, because he knows that this is sort of his project. This traffic light coalition is way of governing now, and he needs to make this the default option for the 2025 election in the eyes of the voters. So for him, keeping this coalition together and providing sort of the leadership from the center, I think this will continue to be his style.
Jana, would you like to come in on that?
Yeah, just a footnote, because I think absolutely Christian Lindner needs to prove that he's up to the task. And I think this is by no means clear, also looking at his background. But I think Annalena Baerbock is in a somewhat more difficult position because expectations were so high when her candidacy was announced, when she was basically declaring that she was running for chancellor. And so, yeah, she was loaded with expectations, and she will always be measured against this 20%, 25% promise that basically was there when she started to announce her candidacy. And so, looking at Annalena Baerbock, I still think there is a widespread perception that she has not delivered, whereas Christian Lindner doesn't suffer from this because nobody was expecting him ever to deliver, I don't know, 25% of the votes. And I think that makes it now, in retrospect, more difficult for Annalena Baerbock. But Christian has certainly a point that this is also a gender issue, and that we underestimate Annalena Baerbock also because, yeah, there is kind of some sort of gender bias.
Yeah, I think both of you make very fair points on that front. And, you know, yes, I think Lindner is getting a comparatively easy ride, but then he is also a more established figure on the German national stage. I mean, when you think back to 2017, when he was possibly going to become finance minister under a so-called Jamaica government with the Greens and the Christian Democrats, you know, that at that point, Baerbock was barely known in national politics. So I think her rise has been more speedy, and perhaps that means that she's kind of under a more intense sort of scrutiny. But there's definitely some sexism in it as well. Just quickly on Scholz, I'd like to pick up on something you were saying, Christian, about, you know, him styling himself as the continuity candidate, as the reassuring figure at the centre. I mean, do you think that matches the scale of the government's ambition? Because they titled this coalition agreement, you know, Mehr Fortschritt wagen, to dare more progress, and it's quite a dynamic agenda: big changes on social legislation, promise of a decade of investment, a clear shift in foreign policy, as Jan has mentioned, major kind of climate action on the cards. You know, he's a reassuring figure, and he's quite a Merkel-like figure, or he's sort of presented himself as such. Do you think he's actually got the sort of the grit and the willingness to shake things up that sort of agenda demands?
I think he does. And looking at how he basically carefully crafted the EU recovery fund, and how he basically built an alliance first with the French but also with the German chancellery, and how he brought everybody on board with this, which was basically a pretty bold idea and difficult to sell also to the German public. And I think he's just the quiet figure in the background, but I think he's definitely a leader. And what I like about him is that he early on emphasized that he really wanted an inclusive government, that I think he is not going to dominate this, but he's trying really to hear everybody and to really build something that has the support of all three parties. And I see him basically, you know, this notion leading from behind is in a German context always the equivalence to no leadership. But I think in this case, it's different. I see him really as a leading figure.
Christian, would you like to come in there?
I agree. Yeah. And it's this, I think the German public is aware of the need for change and the need for a sort of bold modernization decade. Even the CDU ran with that slogan. Right. And that basically says a lot. They didn't say we want everything to stay the same. They were saying it's time for a modernization decade. So basically the German public is aware of that. And so Olaf Scholz's role is, as Jana said, as a leader, but also as a sort of skillful, calm, rational political management of that important transition. The German public is fully aware that we need to make big progress on climate change, right? But they want someone in charge who's bold in, you know, the goal that we all have, but is the capable, skillful political manager of this. And this, Olaf Scholz, arguably is one of the best that we have in Germany, and his wealth of experience will serve him well there. So I think this is what Germans are looking out for, and this is what he will embody.
And I suppose if some of the other senior ministers are such energetic agents of change, you know, sort of ambitious, and in some cases younger politicians like Baerbock or Lindner or Robert Habeck, and arguably then there's a case for a more stable, more reassuring figure at the center, kind of keeping the whole thing grounded. I'd like to ask you both one final thing, which is this government is coming to office in the next few days, and its biggest priority, and it's already very clear, will be tackling the new wave of COVID that we're seeing here in Germany. You know, we've seen record infection numbers and until the last couple of days, highest death rate in 9 months, talk of mandatory vaccines and possibly new lockdown style restrictions. How do you see the government the new traffic light government responding to that crisis? Because they're not going to have much of a honeymoon period, will they?
No, I think it was already a very tough start. So the first impressions, I think, were already quite negative, because you had the impression that Germany wasn't governed. I mean, because we had the outgoing and the incoming government, but so I think it's actually a tough start. But I think now that they are getting a grip at it, and what I think is that they basically break some of the promises they've made during the election campaign. They said that there will be no general obligation for everybody to get vaccinated. I think they are questioning this now openly. And I think it's the right move, but I think it's not entirely easy to sell this to the German public. And I think what they will try first is some sort of lockdown for the unvaccinated through the back door, through kind of imposing a strict 2G or 2G plus rule for every public interaction, basically, or private interaction.
Any concluding thoughts on that, Christian?
So I think it's a very tough test for this government that hasn't even been sworn in yet, right? There is wide expectation that they need to manage this quickly, and they need to manage it well. While at the same time, it's mostly the Free Democrats who had a very specific COVID policy that was now put in place by this government. And basically it's outdated before they even enter office. And so this is, for me, I'm not an expert on how to fight pandemics. This is, for me, is a test of whether this compromise that they have found amongst each other, whether this holds, and whether basically the Social Democrats and the Greens back up the FDP, whose, you know, influence on the pandemic policy has already been felt, and sort of whether they stick together in crisis, right? So this is really a first test of whether this political project of these three parties can really hold together over this, even through very severe crisis. So it is also an opportunity for them to sort of make clear that this is a joint political project of all three parties. And so far, they are managing that challenge really well.
Yeah, I suppose managing a crisis can be a bonding experience of sorts, but it will be a baptism of fire. Well, we'll watch all that with great interest over the coming weeks. And for the time being, I'd like to say thank you very much to both of you for joining us. Jana Pouliarin of the ECFR. Thank you, Jana.
Thank you.
And Christian Ordendahl of the CER. Thank you, Christian.
Thanks, Jeremy.
That's it for this follow-up episode of Germany Elects and the series. But our analysis of the new German government continues in the magazine and online at newstatesman.com. Also look out for our in-depth coverage of the upcoming French election next April and our upcoming podcast series, France Elects. You've been listening to Germany Elects, a special World Review pop-up podcast from the New Statesman. I've been Jeremy Cliff in Berlin, and this podcast was produced by Adrian Bradley and May Robson.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.